This is the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast, where we have conversations with everyday martial artists about their histories and how martial arts influence their daily lives. You are listening to the abbreviated version of this podcast, which is the first 20 minutes or so of the show. Please consider supporting the show by subscribing on our Patreon page, www.patreon.com/MALMAG. And for about the price of one coffee shop coffee per month, you can get access to 4 new podcasts each month, 1 week before their YouTube release dates. You also have access to all of our existing shows, which at this point is about 100 hours of shows for you to enjoy. Individual shows can be purchased at our Gumroad page. That is malmag.gumroad.com. This week, I sit down on Zoom with Los Angeles martial arts instructor Sabrina Burchard, and we talk about her being an NCAA fencer, as well as her move from fencing into teaching the Filipino martial arts, as she has become a fearsome expert at Kalis Ilustrissimo. Sit back and enjoy. Welcome to the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast, and this week I have someone who reached out to me a little while back trying to get connected to some of the martial arts community in Southern California, and as I kind of checked her out on social media and that, I found that she's a very, very dynamic and interesting individual who teaches, if you're familiar with the Filipino martial arts world, she teaches an art called Kalis Ilustrissimo, which is a really awesome Filipino martial art, kind of sword based, but they're wicked with the sticks too, and kind of all around art. And they are folks that we see around, but I haven't had that much chance to say get around high level practitioners of it. So I'm very excited to talk to Sabrina Burchard here. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
We are very excited to have you too. There's something I've discussed with a lot of people about the change, because I'm in my 50s now, and I started when I was preteen, and just the amount of change of the demographic of women involved in martial arts these days is so different than from when I was a kid. Out of 60 people, there was maybe 3 women back when I was a kid. Now, like I say, our kids' class is like 50% women. So to me, it's always great to talk with female martial artists, but people that are of a pretty high level like yourself too. So it's always kind of exciting, and I'm hoping that, you know, this show we are able to push more female practitioners out there a little bit.
Great.
So tell me how you got started in martial arts.
Well, I was an NCAA fencer on a D1 top 10 team, and right after that, I was coaching at Appalachian State University, but I had no one to fence. Coming out of the NCAA, I just had students, and it wasn't the same level. So I looked for something else. I looked for judo, actually, and it was a small town, you know, and I accidentally found Filipino martial arts. I walked into a dojo saying, hey, do you guys have judo? Because, you know, I figured as a fencer, it would be very good, well-rounding to get some grappling in. Someone said, wait a minute, you're a fencing coach. We don't have judo, but you might like this. And we knife sparred that very night. Wow. And I've been in Filipino martial arts after that.
Wow. So was this an Ilustrissimo school, or was it a different style?
It was not. It was a Lameco school.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know the difference back then. I was just like, oh, cool, hitting things. I didn't know the difference. Eventually, now looking back, it was a Lameco school. And from there, you know, I branched out into other martial arts. I was training heavily in Muay Thai for a couple of years, and found myself still in, at that point, I was living in Tel Aviv, and I was training all the time in Lightning Scientific. And which was great. I loved it. I loved my coach, John Escudero. He's wonderful if you ever happen to be in Israel. And I was sparring, I found in a lot of Filipino martial arts, a lot of people don't want to spar for various reasons. And as a fencer, I didn't understand at all, which caused some problems. Just, as an athlete, sparring is the only way to really learn what you're good at. Like, you don't know if you can do attack in preparation unless you actually do it a lot in
Right.
sparring. You spar with it a lot, and then you start to sort of develop your game. So I didn't have that so much. It wasn't John. John was great. He would spar me, and he brought me in with his friends who would spar. And one of them happened to be an illustrissimo. And I was at the point where I was training so much, I wanted to be an instructor, but I felt personally that I couldn't be an instructor unless I was competing in it. I felt like if I didn't have competition experience and a lot of sparring, I wouldn't feel like I knew what any of the moves could actually really do. So I was already training in illustrissimo because one of John's friends did illustrissimo, and he said, "Hey, you're a fencer. You should really be doing some more illustrissimo." And it really clicked with me. I really gravitated towards it, and it wasn't so different from lightning. Lightning and illustrissimo. I mean, Mang Ben and Tatang used to train together, so it wasn't so far-fetched.
Right.
And when I told John, I said, I want to go to the Philippines because I can afford to train full time and compete there. And I said, who should I study with? And he said, he didn't have a good answer for me. He didn't have an answer for me. He said, no one, even though he was very supportive. And then I was like, what about Arnold? Because his illustrissimo friend said you have to study with Arnold Narzo. So, and then John was like, oh, Arnold, yeah, you can study with Arnold. So I was like, okay, I have my teacher's blessing, I'll go. So I moved to the Philippines and trained full time with Arnold. I competed. I got a job as a fencing coach in Manila to pay my rent. And I just trained and competed all the time in illustrissimo until finally Arnold was like, your students should call you Guru. And that was it.
There you go.
That's the long story. I
That's
hope
a great
that wasn't
one. Yeah, I like it. It's really good. So, where you went to school, Appalachian State, where's that at?
So that's where I taught. I was coaching. That's in Boone, North Carolina.
Okay.
I went to Temple University.
Temple.
Which
Okay.
has a great fencing team.
Right.
But
Wow. Okay. So let's see. I'm trying to just plot you on a map here. So you've been in North Carolina. You've been in Israel. You've been in the Philippines. And Temple is in.
Philadelphia.
I say I should know because I used to be part of the Big East at University of Miami myself. But
Ah, cool.
I'm thinking, where were all these football teams we played exactly from?
Oh, Temple had a horrible football team.
No, poor guys. You're like the
Yeah.
kicking post of the Big East or whatever, but I'm like, now that generally means that there's a lot of really smart people in the school. Their football play program's bad.
Oh my God.
That's pretty cool. So how did you get involved in fencing then to begin with?
Fencing, I started fencing late. The Russians would say I started late. I was 13.
Course, you're a fetus, right? Starting something, the Russians think you're late at it.
Yeah. So I was 13. I danced ballet. I loved playing sports when I was a kid. But I loved dancing, and ballet was my main thing. I danced all the time. I played sports in school, like just during recess. Hockey was one of my favorites, actually, like just street hockey.
Wow.
And I realized that a lot of my favorite sports do involve sticks of some sort. But I was dancing ballet very seriously, and it was at that time where they kind of pressure girls to become more professional, you know, like I was 12 and
Yeah.
started getting on my case that my feet weren't good, things like that. And at that point, my ballet place moved. I was taking it at a community center, and it was
Oh.
too far for my mother to take me. And I think she was secretly happy about that because she was like, why don't you try something else? And there was fencing in the same community center. So I was like, what about fencing? She's like, great. Yeah, sure. It
That's cool.
was a
That's
good fit. It was a very good fit.
well, that's cool. You're actually one of the few people I can actually discuss ballet and its connection to this type of training with then. I've actually taken lessons myself.
Oh, it's great, isn't
Yeah, I'm
it?
not ready to go dance myself either, but there's a woman by the name of Dana Gilchrist who's actually very much my senior down at the Inosanto Academy, and she's the one who would teach Guru Dan and I and Dr. Mark Cheng lessons in ballet like every Thursday morning. And
Yeah,
so she's someone
great.
I'm going to yank onto the show here at some point. She's a very fascinating person and good friend. But you know, through her, I was able to kind of discover just how damn hard ballet is. I mean, you know, you look at it and everyone you see appears to be very good. So they make it look like, oh, this is effortless. And then you go and you try it, especially as a big ox like myself, you go, wow, this is just not an easy thing, but it's incredible training.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and it definitely made the transition to martial arts a lot easier. You know, all having all the balance, coordination, and you know, just command over your body. You know what to tell your body in order to get it done. So I love getting dancers now when they want to do fencing. I'm also a fencing coach, so I love getting fencers that were dancers, fighters that were dancers.
Yeah, I agree. It's I like dancers and I like the stunt people when they come in. They can teach them more than one thing at a time and they tend to pick up on it pretty quick.
Yeah.
So they give you a different challenge. So you go from ballet, which is a heavy, you know, conditioning footwork endeavor, to fencing, which is also a pretty heavy footwork endeavor as well.
Yes.
Was there a relation there that you saw? I mean, the movement obviously is different, but there's got to be some similarity, I think.
Being able to move,
Oh.
control whether I was taking a large step or small step, and it's so, you know, in fighting the nuance of distance, you know,
Right.
it's so critical, like just those little tiny adjustments in distance can really make or break it, literally.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that definitely helped. I once went to a tournament when I was in high school, a fencing tournament, and there was a woman there who had beautiful form. She didn't win any bouts, and we started talking, and she was a ballet major,
Oh,
and
wow.
she had just started fencing the week before and was at a tournament looking great. I mean, she didn't win bouts, but she'd only been fencing for a week. So
That's
I'm
good for
sure
her.
she's much better now, but it was incredible. I was like, wow.
That really takes some courage. And I think, you know, maybe I think ballet is something that probably gives people a little courage too, because you kind of are, I mean, I've heard of some of the training methods. There's a lot of pressure there and stress that you're kind of getting used to pretty quick. So maybe it isn't that odd for her to jump into something at a competitive level of something she started the week before, I guess. You know,
Yeah.
and it kind of goes back to what you said earlier about people in FMA, but a lot of martial arts in general, jiu-jitsu, they kind of not so much because they do have you spar all the time, but there is a fear or a resistance to sparring. And I think it's interesting because you're coming at this from fencing, which you guys in fencing, you'll gear up so it's relatively safe from the get-go. I would almost give the excuse in Kali sometimes people are more afraid of the injury, but there's probably other things involved too.
I mean, yeah, there it's nuanced, especially in the Philippines, there's, a lot of tradition there. People, there's a culture there that's different than a sports culture. Some of these, they've been, there are, it goes back generations, and they feel like maybe they feel a lot of pressure, or maybe it's simply that it just means something different. When you ask someone to spar, it's like a challenge of their whole system. And for me as an athlete, it's like I just wanted to play. Like I just want to check my pari-repose to make sure it's solid. Like that's it. I'm not trying to challenge anyone's but I get it. There's cultural things involved too.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely something in martial arts, and it is an interesting thing because I think one of the things, coming from the Jeet Kune Do world, what I see a lot of stuff coming into JKD and people finding what they think is so unique to it. I go, okay, well, if you think that's unique, I already know that you've never been in competitive sports because everything that he's doing here is already in competitive sports of, in some shape or form. And this idea of playing, like you said, because I think the ultimate translation of martial art is some sort of combat. So that means life and death. That means life and death of egos and cultures and that sort of thing. So yeah, I maybe it's taken a little too seriously at times when it's like, well, there's still a play involved. And it's Gurdan Inosanto tends to use this term all the time, which I can't repeat because I do not speak, I think it's Visayan. I don't speak it that well, but it's basically play to learn. You play to learn, or something like that. It's kind of a longer sentence, but so we know it's there. But no culture is just simple black and white. There's a lot of nuances there. So
Of
even though
course.
it's
Yeah,
so.
I found in the Illustrissimo group, they were more, one thing I really gravitated towards in Illustrissimo, they were more amenable to sparring. They were more, they wanted to spar more. I really like that. Coach Arnold will spar anyone, he's very good.
Yeah.
He's a
Well,
good
there's,
coach too.
and think about it, that's how you get good is to do it. You got to be willing to lose because, I mean, losing, especially in play, is not that big of a deal.
Right.
Unfortunately, make it a huge deal. And, we learn about as a kid, you'd think, the idea of not being a sore loser and this sort of thing. It's like, get over yourself a little bit. And it's like I run in a kickboxing class, sparring too, and the whole idea I try to get people in it, and I'm finally getting my group this way because they're the same group they've been in there and have sparred enough with each other that they're finally loosening up, to where it's like I'm not worried about beating this guy again or having him beat me again because yeah, he's got the better of me, quote unquote, a few times, or I got the better of him a few times, and you just kind of get over that
Yeah, I
eventually.
mean, with fighting, really anyone on any given day could beat anyone. There are so many factors. It's chaotic in a good way. Like it's anyone's game, and people get this for their own, they get this idea that they are now beyond a level of someone else, and then it really is to their detriment that they feel that way, because this person is going to beat them, whether they like it or not, because they have that mentality. They're not playing their best game. They're not, So you have to respect everyone that you spar and also not be afraid of anyone that you spar.
Right, exactly. Because in the end, hopefully you find the joy in it. Like I can see in,
Yeah,
again,
you're
this,
just working on things.
yeah, it's mainly like an audio podcast, but the nice thing is I'm looking at you as you talk about it and your eyes twinkle when you talk about sparring. So it's clearly, you enjoy it. It's a fun thing. It's a
Yeah, for
game
sure.
that it's play. So, hopefully what do you think people should do to find the joy in that, the way that you're talking about it and the way you feel about it?
I think one thing, and this is something that people like to argue a lot, and I think just like anything else, it's really a balance. Pad up, suit up, take some of the pressure off of it being life or death. Because eventually you'll be so fast and strong from training that when you do have to spar with no padding and all that stuff, you will have the speed and timing. And the argument against that is, well, you don't know what it's like to get hit, so you're not actually defending yourself. Like, okay, so you train. That's why there are so many different types of training that you incorporate. But if you only do one type of training with no padding, and every time you get hit, that's the end of the bout. Like,
right.
You're never going to reach that level of just repetition. You're never going to get in enough repetition. You're not going to try those riskier moves and realize that they're not that risky. You can do them.
Right. Right. Yeah. With enough repetition and training. Sure. And understanding.
Yeah. So pad up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So what, let's say a starter kit for someone looking to try this. I mean, there's people listening to this, probably going to be different levels of experience with FMA. Some may be interested in it. Some may be starting it out. Some may be experienced people. What's your starter kit for sparring? What kind of gear do you think they should have?
It depends on the style. For illustrissimo, I would say hockey gloves, because those hand hits are hard.
Uh-huh.
And also with the padding, you should be doing a lot of sparring drills so that you're actually practicing those defenses against hand hits and not just getting hit in the hand a million times and not feeling it. And I know that's what people would say. So good pair of gloves, sparring sticks, and then some kind of headgear. And that's kind of a preference thing. You know, for me, it's a fence mask. Those can be a little rough on your sparring weapons, though. They can really shred them up depending on the sparring weapons of your choice. I personally don't like the Arnis ones with the big slats, like the umpire masks, because sticks go right through them. And so if you have a thrusting game,
yeah,
that could be dangerous. So maybe some goggles or something too.
Right. Yeah. That's as Bill Murray would say back in the old SNL bit, you know, a poke in the eye, that'll ruin a Christmas, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a reason why they, you know, keep that kind of shots out of any kind of sport. You know, eye shots tend to end it. But I definitely agree with you there. In fact, I think I've seen some people that they do like those larger masks like you're talking about, but they do employ some sort of goggle underneath for the same reason.
Yeah, and that's fine, because they're kind of like funny to hit in the head with those. Like they make like a little thunk sound when when you get hit and you're like, ugh.
Exactly. Now, what level of like padded stick are you using? You wouldn't go with an actual, like the Dog Brothers, that they're like the real rattan, right?
Most of my, before I came to LA, my padded sticks were like 50 pesos from the Philippines. They're like a little skinny stick wrapped in plastic, wrapped in foam, wrapped in, you know, and they're skinny. I like the skinnier, you know, I got small hands, so I like the skinny real feel sticks. Since coming to LA, you know, I have some access. Steve gave me some Bunal brand ones, and those were awesome.
Plug for Steve.
Yeah. And also when I was training in Hong Kong, so Kalis Brotherhood, another group that I would highly recommend if you're ever in Hong Kong, they actually introduced me to Bunal brand because they had some of those skinny ones.
And this concludes the abbreviated version of the podcast. Please consider supporting the program by going to www.patreon.com/MALMAG and subscribing to the show. You can also purchase this individual episode or any individual episode at our Gumroad page. That's MALMAG.gumroad.com. Thank you for listening to this episode with Sabrina Burchard. Coming up next week, we have a young man whose reel you have seen on Malmag News, Ricky Parrish. Our Malmag online store at martialartslifestylemagazine.com has a full selection of Timmy B's brand sticks for FMA and Krabiker Bong. Timmy B's brand now selling in Japan as well. Beautiful Timmy B's brand shirts and Dos Manos shirts are available, with new t-shirt designs and more products coming soon. An online course in the Dos Manos method for FMA is available under the Courses tab. More courses coming soon. Check out the Places to Train tab to find schools near you, and click on the events calendar page to see what seminars and events are happening all around the world. And of course, visit our main page for articles on the martial arts. Music by Jack Al Relic. Martial Arts Lifestyle Magazine and the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast are trademarked and copyrighted by TNT LLC.